Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Nina Kowser Show. My God, it felt like another tense game at the beginning of that game against Aston Villa. But hey, the Reds doing what they do best, winning, and an important win, not only in the league, but what it means for the season. And of course, that FA Cup game against Chelsea over the weekend. And joining me on this podcast, I have two excellent guests, people I've not podcasted in a while, so it's always good to freshen things up, just like Jürgen did with that team lineup, which I'm sure we'll get to in a minute. But first up, without a guy that doesn't really need an intro, but I'm going to give him one because he's just awesome. He's my good friend. I love podcasting with him. He's so cool. It is Mr. Justin Wells. Welcome back, Justin.
Glad to be here, Nina. Thankfully, I'm talking to you after a win again.
I know. Mando on for the Villa game and he was so calm. I was like, what happened to you? You're so calm. But I loved it. And it's great to have you on as well, Justin, and look forward to hearing your thoughts on that game. And joining Justin on this podcast, I mean, when this guy joined the Nina Kowser Show WhatsApp group, I got really excited because I do have a terrible name memory when it comes to names and things, but I remember my guests and I remember the people that contribute to the show. And I've been told off air that it has been 6 years since this guy has had any involvement on the Nina Kowser Show. So it's great. It's like having a fresh, brand new signing or a legend making his re-signing, like the Robbie Fowler days. I don't know. It is Steve. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm feeling very relieved after being a bit cocky this afternoon before that game.
Oh, well, you know what? It paid off. Guys, I will come to both of you in a minute, but we do have a caller, and I know it's late where this caller's calling from, so I'm just going to bring him in real quick. Unfortunately, Kieran can't call today, so I'm going to give him a special shout-out. He'll be back next week, but a shout-out to him because he is my go-to caller, so really, really appreciate his input. But our first caller today is a different one, and I've not heard from him in a while. It's Chris. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Nina. Hey, guys. Everybody's heart rate back to normal after that game. it was a rough one. But what I did want to come on and say really quick was I was a little worried coming into this match, specifically with, you know, the potential hangover from, you know, how the players were from Spurs with that result, because Klopp did mention that it was kind of like a funeral vibe, he said. I don't know if he was talking about the crowd or the players when they were in the locker room, because they dropped points last week, and I was worried with that mentality carrying over. But I think this type of game is exactly what they needed, a grind out, you know, 2-1 victory. That I definitely think this is the type of game we're going to have to deal with on Saturday for the cup final, and definitely the type of mentality that we're going to have to deal with if we're going to play with a relentless team against Real Madrid. So to me, Dell said Klopp was talking about the dressing room. still point stands. Even the fan base itself, you know, like when our emotions that can radiate out to the players onto the pitch. So I was a little worried, you know, that our form would dip a little bit going into the cup finals. But definitely to me, I think this was the type of game that we needed. I know we're behind on goal difference with City, but at this point, I'm not really thinking about that. I just want to get the treble. What are you guys' thoughts on, you know, needing this type of game for the team to reset their mentality, dig their heels back in into that siege mentality, and, you know, just get the job done and not worrying about, you know, running up the score?
I think there are two sides to it as well, though. Does anyone else not feel relieved that Villa actually turned up and they might turn up against City?
There is that, but carry on going, Steve, because I think Chris has like absolutely hit the nail on the head. And that was kind of the narrative that I was kind of, not the narrative, but that was the kind of intro that I was going to go with. Like, obviously, there was disappointment from the Spurs game. And then you saw Man City beat Newcastle the way they did. And, you know, for Liverpool to have, and then to start off like that as well, you know, conceding within 3 minutes. So, you know, I think Chris has hit the nail on the head, but take it away, because you're hoping that they do that. But how many times have we been like sat there praying, hoping a team does something and it kind of falls apart? I also have to give a lot of credit to Steven Gerrard for coming out and wanting to kind of, you know, have some kind of aggression and bring some kind of energy. But it's yours. Go with it, Steve.
In the famous words of Rogi, there was a lot of character in tonight. But I kind of felt like the equalising goal was fitting of our team, right? It was a absolute shambles in the Villa box, the same as the goal we conceded. Yeah. But VVD crossing to Matip, could you think of anything more poetic when we need a goal to bring us back? Those two have been absolute BMS for us all season. Then after that, it was just frustrating. I was sat in my nice comfy chair watching the match thinking that we will get a goal, but we're going to have one of those days where we're going to have to watch missed chance, bad cross. But it just, the way we scored that equaliser, I wasn't worried. I was just frustrated. Does that make sense? But I think the team had looked like they were feeling the same, right? They looked like they were getting frustrated. They were getting annoyed. Obviously, the Spurs match playing on their mind. They knew they'd score, but dear God, did they have to grind out actually finally getting a clear-cut chance? It's kind of, that was my take from sitting there painfully watching it.
No, I like that. I think you've got some great takeaways there from that. And I think it's a great response to Chris's points there initially. And Justin, I'm going to come to you. I mean, I think, you know, genuinely, we were all relieved. And what do you make of, like, how Liverpool kind of started that game and how they played?
I think that we kind of got sucker punched by bad refereeing really early. That's a tough thing to come back from. And we came back from it immediately. So I think that even though this team is mentally kind of, you know, a little bit fried, which is understandable considering just the fact that they are going to play more games than any English side in an extremely long time over the course of this season, it's really easy to see where this team could be completely in total, where, you know, not completely and totally shocked, because I don't think they are. I still think they know that there are things to be won. I think you're going to see a strong amount of energy from them on Saturday. But in the league, it feels like the odds have become kind of lower. And you can see that teams really want to come at us. Because right now, at the moment in the league, we seem a little bit more vulnerable than City. City look like every time they're going to play in the league at the moment, they're just going to turn up and score 5 goals. We don't. We're not scoring a lot of goals at the moment. We are grinding everything out. And we did that again today. And
it's also worth noting as well, City have nothing to play for but the league now.
They have nothing to play for but the league, and the league can kind of reward being completely robotic. Right? It's not there's a huge difference between playing in a league where draws can happen to you, and they are basically results that could destroy your season, versus playing in a knockout competition where you have to win this or you're going to lose this. City don't have that kind of mentality. If you tell City, you have to win this game or else you will not win this trophy like it's a playoff, that's when they end up in trouble. So that's when we really need to, you know, focus on what they can and can't do. And also when the rest of when the Reds are going to basically come under what they're going to need to do in order to actually win these two trophies, which is just gut it out. Doesn't matter how it looks. Just find that, once you draw even, find that second goal. We've done that for the most part, with the exception of against Spurs. So I think we can keep doing it.
I think that's a good point. And I think if we keep chipping away and keep chipping away and we get to the last game of the season and we're in with the shout, that is City's final, right? And as we saw against Madrid, they might crumble, they might cock it up, and we might still be in with a chance. And as I said at the start, Villa showed up tonight. They tried to get in behind. They tried to be... They weren't rough, but they weren't exactly not physical, right? They were making the tackles. They were trying to close down spaces. And Ings looked like he had a point to prove. And you know that Ings and Watkins and Coutinho would all love to score a goal against City. That means they don't win the Premier League. So I think as long as we can just win our last three games, I think we're still in with a chance, because that's the point. I think they could crumble.
And also City now, they have like some defensive issues as well, right? I didn't watch the game over the weekend, but a little birdie told me that, they've got some defensive problems in the defence now, they've got some defensive injuries. So, I mean, Pep Guardiola might be talking absolute rubbish there, and it's not the first time he's done it this week. Flop living rent-free in his head. But yeah, Liverpool just got to keep winning their games. And I think as well, I think Chris hit the nail on the head. That was exactly, because I was watching that game at the beginning and obviously Spurs, and I was like, now is not the time to be having, you should never have a wobbler in the season, but it's going to happen. But now is not the time to be having some bad results when you've got two big finals coming up. And I think this will probably put them in good stead, because we know that they are mentally tough and they're agile and they're strong. But obviously, like today, Villa had a right good old go at it, but I think also you have to attribute some of it to Liverpool looking quite tired. And also Jurgen Klopp, there were some big changes in that starting 11. So, Justin, I'm going to come to you, and we always have to start from the top. I mean, the team lineup, what did you make of it? Klopp made some changes there. And, I think, some obvious ones were kind of like Tsimikas coming in for Robbo, Matip and Van Dijk back to the usual partnership. I think the biggest... changes were probably the midfield change up in terms of Jones and Keita and Fabinho starting, and of course Jota getting the nod ahead of Salah, and of course Mane and Diaz start. So I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11. Was it right for Klopp to do that? Because I thought the players did look very jaded against Spurs, so it definitely needed a refresher.
I thought he got it right. I think that Thiago needed a rest. I think that Henderson probably was the one who I probably would have started instead of Fabinho. But at that point, it's a coin flip, right? Because those are the only two guys you can play as the six. And it's the guy who's played the most minutes lately in the midfield in Fabinho versus the guy who's played the most minutes overall in the season in the midfield in Henderson. Both of those guys are going to be subject to, there's injury risk against both at that point. So, you have to basically just go with what you think is useful. Giving Thiago a rest was huge, because we need him to be able to play from the off against Chelsea, because they've still never seen him from the off, in the midfield in this team with Van Dijk behind him. You're probably likely to, as much as I would, prefer to see Fabinho healthy, you're likely to see Henderson in the sixth. So I think it made, a good deal of sense actually to play Curtis Jones, who I actually think was pretty good, right? I think Curtis Jones is a good midfielder who has featured into the rotation here and there. He's kind of been between him and Milner, the fifth midfielder, because both of them have gotten starts recently. And both of them have done okay in the time they've gotten. Both haven't been the most consistent, but that's what happens when you don't play a lot of minutes. And I think Jones, after a rough first 15 minutes, and I think that rough first 15 minutes was certainly aided and abetted by, in the bad way, by playing with Tsimikas behind him at fullback, where I'm sure the two of them haven't had a ton of experience playing together at left fullback and left-sided eight, and playing the left-sided eight. Mm-hmm. So I think it was, I think that it was going to take some time this side to get to know each other. I think in about 25 minutes into the first half, they kind of started clicking and understanding what they were trying to do. And I don't think from that point on, Villa carried really any threat. I just think that our habit of just gutting out these one-goal wins is making us feel more nervous than they are. But I think we did establish, I think that midfield did eventually develop a good amount of control. And I think that the issue for us with everybody at this point is minutes played, because we played a lot of games this season. So, mm-hmm. you know, just got to trust the Klopp's going to make the right decision and not, and if injuries happen, they happen.
Absolutely. And Steve, I'll come to you. I mean, your thoughts of the team lineup definitely needed a change up. I stand true to my word. I looked at a team lineup and I wasn't shocked or disappointed at anything. You just have to look at the Spurs game. And, you know, in the second half, I thought our players looked tired and he had to play that team. So I want to get your thoughts on the starting lineup. Was there any shockers for you? Anyone that you would have preferred to have start? Hindsight is a wonderful thing, as we all know.
I said in the Discord chat before the match, there were only two things I would have liked to see different. I'd have liked to see Gomez start. He's been playing really well at right back, and I kind of felt like he'd probably be a better fit up against Ings and Watkins today. Trent looks like he's played a lot of minutes. I just thought maybe he could have done with the rest. And I wanted to see Henderson start, but mostly because I want Fabiago as the midfield three for the final, which is looking highly unlikely now. So that was the main differences that I'd have liked to have seen. But when I saw the lineup, I wasn't disappointed or surprised by it at all. I thought maybe Mo might have started over Mane because he needs a goal, but Mane's been our top scorer for the last 3 months and, you know, came up with the most important finish today. So, no, I thought the team was good. I enjoyed watching Curtis play. As Justin said, he looks good. He looks more and more comfortable as a first-team player. Kind of hope he gets a loan next year to a team where he can play 30 Premier League games plus just to really get some rhythm. But, yeah, he looked decent. He got hooked because we needed Thiago, and Thiago's control, not because he didn't play well, right?
No, he runs in the Discord chat. Del's got a question here. And no win. We couldn't have a much better opponent than Southampton. Of course, you know what Leicester did to them then. And such
but there's a problem here. They've already taken their tonking for the season. So there's only usually one of them.
Have they taken it this season? I've not really been following Southampton.
They have a 6-0 defeat.
Oh, have they? Have they taken it? Oh, right, okay.
They've taken it on the chin this season already.
Boo-hoo. Right, we'll swiftly move on to the next question. Steve, you kind of touched on this, and so did you, Justin. Fabinho, and Del wants to know thoughts on the Fabinho injury. I mean, we have just come on literally on the pod, so I don't have any updates. I mean, what did you make of it? To me, his performance before the injury as well, Steve, I thought he looked really tired. I thought he looked quite leggy. I thought he was playing I don't know, maybe some dodgy passes. He just did. He looked off it. He looked tired. And the injury was just like a shocker. And like you said, it looks highly unlikely that he might feature in the final now, which is an absolute bummer because he is incredible.
Yeah, he looked really off the pace, but he didn't. There was no drama, right? He just basically sat down and said, "I'm coming off." Then stood up and said, "I'm coming off." And they just whipped him off. So. Yeah. I'm wondering if he had a niggle pre-match or he was just wasn't feeling right and Klopp made the right call, just get him off, because it could be something minor, could be a tweak or a bruise or a foot, or just feeling, you know, absolutely ruined after the last few weeks. So we can live in hope that he makes the bench for the weekend. That would be a nice surprise. Whereas, you know, Naby, I don't think Naby has any actual injuries. I just think he was being an absolutely wonderful shithouse in the last 5 minutes. But we can pray, because losing Fabinho would be pretty horrible. But as I said, he didn't look like he pulled up. He didn't look like something had gone. He just looked like he went, "No, I've had enough. I'm getting off."
Yeah, he didn't even go down the tunnel. He stayed on the bench the entire time. Like, there's every possibility this late in the season we're telling players that if you feel literally anything, go down.
I have a tweet here from Simon Brundish. Fab has played 900 minutes in the last 5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, for all we know, he had the shits all afternoon, and Klopp said, can you play? And he said, yeah, I'll be all right. And yeah. 28 minutes, and he might have gone, nah, I'm knackered.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ultimately, like, it makes no sense to me to jump to a conclusion about it. And even if he is injured, next man up. That's how that goes. If he's injured, the next man comes up, which that's going to be Henderson playing the six. And, you know, we've played well with Jordan Henderson playing the six before, so... Nobody should be, you know, it sucks for Thiago, and you'd prefer him there because he is better at the sixth than Henderson. But it's not like Jordan Henderson is an absolutely abhorrent sixth. He can play that role. He can do it well. And Chelsea, I believe, also have their own injury issues. So it's not like we're going to be facing a team that's fresh. It's May. Everybody's injured. These guys have all played a lot of football.
And it means Milner's going to score a penalty that makes us beat City by one goal on the last game of the season, doesn't it?
I love it. We're going through everything here. All the possibilities. Could you imagine? That would really stick it to him as well. Ex-City player and all of that. But guys, let's go back to the game. And Justin, I'll come to you. I mean, I'd literally not even settled to the game yet.
We do have some quotes from Klopp.
Oh, go on.
He said, they don't know how bad it is, but it is a big blow for us. So that's not positive.
Do you think you play mind games?
I have no idea.
I don't believe a word.
Like, you know what he's thinking and saying, Justin. You have insight.
I don't, because he, you know, says these kinds of things all the time.
Yeah.
I don't trust the thing that Klopp says about injuries. He says players are fine and they don't play for weeks. He says players are out and they turn up 3 days later. Trent was meant to be out for absolutely ages and came back and was brilliant against, was it Watford, earlier in the season? So, I don't know. We'll see.
We shall see. We'll just have to watch this space.
And Paul Joyce has just tweeted that Klopp says Fabinho is quite positive, but I'm not sure what I can make of that. So, yeah. Basically, no one has a clue. We'll have to wait till tomorrow.
Klopp playing 3D mind game chess. We'll have to wait and hold on and watch this space in anguish. But Justin, I'm going to come to you back to the game. Like I said, I've not even settled to this game, like, you know, mentally in the zone, and Liverpool concede, and it was just an absolute hot mess, you know. Talk to me about that. What were your thoughts? What were your feelings? I was like, oh gosh. But then on the flip side, I was thinking, well, if you're going to concede, you might as well concede early on, because I'd like to see what this team's made out of. And yeah, it was just chaos from my perspective. What did you make of it?
So I have a friend who calls an early goal the kiss of death. And I kind of felt that was what was going to happen for Villa. They scored too early. No, I mean, it's a shit goal. It should never have stood, because Watkins is offside in the build-up, but it did. And Matip and Tsimikas probably could communicate so that they don't run right into each other. And it makes for it easy to happen. I mean, it's a calamitous goal to surrender, but if you're going to surrender that kind of goal, you'd rather do it in the third minute than the 83rd.
Yeah, I am with you on that one. I suppose you might as well get that, you know, that lurgy, that horrible goal out of the way early. I mean, what did you make of that? I mean, I think there's probably a few Liverpool supporters, and I think there's some people who just like to have a good old whinge on social media, Steve. And, you know, that goal went in, and, you know, they've got their tweets already saved in the draft. You know, like what they're going to say at full time. But a really, really horrible goal to concede. But on the flip side, and what Justin said as well, you might as well concede it early on. And to me, it kind of had shades of, yeah, Liverpool look really tired. Yeah, Liverpool haven't settled into the game. Yeah, there's a few big changes in that Liverpool starting lineup, and they've just not quite found their rhythm. And yeah, that's what it felt like to me.
I just wrote down shambles.
Yeah.
It's one of those goals for a back four that haven't played that many games together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird on that side of the pitch that it was Matip and not Van Dijk. I can't quite work out why they were back to front at that point. I can't remember what the builder particularly well. As you said, I was just sort of just grabbing my cup of tea. The game was on. I was like, oh, you know, I'm not going to miss anything when I grab my brew. And then I look over and they scored. So, yeah. Bit of a shambles, but We've had a few games like that, haven't we? A few weeks ago, we played a completely new back four, never played together, and we weren't great, but we recovered. And I think that's the big thing about this team is players like Van Dijk and Matip get pissed off with a goal, but they don't drop their heads, which is a bit different to seasons gone by under previous managers, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of, you know, those two players and goals, and Steve, I'm going to stick with you because Liverpool's response was pretty much, you know, pretty sharp. 6 minutes it took, and again, it was a bit of a scrappy goal. You know, that ball was going everywhere, and, you know, and then Van Dijk sort of puts in the cross for Joel Matip, and Joel Matip scores. And, you know, it's always a good day when Joel Matip scores. You know, he did it against Leeds. It puts a smile on your face. But this time around, it was just relief that, yes, Liverpool have just kind of... Because I always find as well, like, the longer it stays at, like, 1-0, not that it's a concern for Liverpool, but, you know, the Spurs game, you know, it just feels like things just settle in. So it was really, really good. And it was really, and it was kind of different for Liverpool to kind of respond, to give that response instantly. So I want to get your thoughts on that goal, because again, equally, I thought it was a hot mess in their box as well.
Yeah, I've only written it down twice all match, but I wrote it down in shambles again. The ball was pinging around the box all over the place. Yeah. Mane was trying to get to it. Tsimikas was trying to do something useful. But as soon as the ball fell to Van Dijk, I was like, we're scoring. He was composed. He slowed down. He's got that thing that Sai talks about, right? That the players that the whole world slows down, or they see it quicker. And he was just nice and calm and put it perfectly into the 6-yard box, where you've got Matip for the lovely tap in. And I think, was it maybe Mane behind? There's definitely a player behind Matip if he misses it, who's tapping it in. So it was great. My only disappointment is I really wanted a full-blown Matip limb celebration, but we didn't get one.
No, we can't have it all. We can't have it all. It was just great to see him scoring. It's good to see our centre-backs getting in on the scoring action. And Justin, I'm going to come to you. I mean, your thoughts on the goal, the build-up, the scrappiness, just your thoughts on the goal in general.
Yeah, I mean, I only have two things that I can really add, because I think Stephen covered it and the circumstances not behind it very well, but first of which is the BBC haven't given the official scoring of an assist to Van Dijk, which bothers me because I want the center back assister to goal, because I just think that that's fun. And the second thing I can think of, and this is going to be a recurring theme throughout this match, is Tyrone Mings is god awful. Like, no command of his area, no command of the areas he's supposed to be defending. He just basically, he's terrible. And the only thing that really kind of bothered me at points was just not isolating him enough. But I think that was probably reasonably good game planning from Villa to know that they have to protect an extremely weak link.
Yeah, I think Villa defensively are quite questionable. And yeah, I think Steven Gerrard certainly needs to tighten up things at the back there. And you know what, it was a really, really scrappy game. I mean, what did you make of it, Justin? Because I felt like the first half was just a bit chaos. I mean, you know, at 19 minutes, I mean, Sadio Mane got the goal, but you know, you sat there at halftime, and you know, like, and I was like kind of looking back at the Spurs game where, you know, Virgil van Dijk had the clear header and obviously it hit the crossbar. And in this game, you know, Tsimikas puts in a cross to Mane, and you know, it's got a clear header, no pressure, and he fires it wide. And I'm sat there at halftime thinking, oh gosh, you know, are those the kind of chances that you kind of, you know, rue later on? But luckily that didn't happen. But, you know, there was just so much going on, and, you know, we'll get to other things. But, and then of course, you know, Alisson had a bit of a brain fart moment as well, when I think Fabinho passed the ball back to him and he tried playing it back to Fabinho, and I think Watkins kind of intercepted it. But luckily nothing came of that. But did you not find that it was just, we looked a bit unsettled in the first half? I don't know, like maybe panicking?
I think we did. I mean, a player who I think was probably our best player on the night missed the most clear-cut chance we had in the entire first half. Naby Keita could have taken that ball in, drank 3 cups of coffee, taken up smoking, quit smoking, and then scored the goal with the amount of time he had.
Yep.
But instead, it just goes off of his standing leg. I mean, look, there's a lot to be said when you're playing in the league where we are, and at this exact point, this late in the season, where you don't have a margin for error. Right? That's going to be mentally tough on players. We typically get past it, right? We won the game, so we got past it. But there are going to be moments in those games where players are going to make mistakes because they're human, and the stakes that they're playing for are incredibly high, and there's a lot riding on them for the game, for them, and for their supporters. So we have to remember that these guys are human and that they're going to make mistakes, but far more often than not, we've seen this team dig themselves out of their mistakes and really get past it.
Absolutely. And what did you make of the first half, Steve? Because, you know, to me, there was a little bit of chaos. And then I thought things started to calm down. I felt like Liverpool were on the front foot, and it was just a shame that halftime happened. But I want to get your thoughts on the first half, because I did feel like, ooh, Liverpool just thought, not that I'm negative or overly critical, but it just seemed like, I don't know, the final ball wasn't great. We were trying to rush things. We were trying to be really, really smart. We were trying to, you know, I don't know, overcomplicate things. I mean, Justin just spoke about that Naby Keita thing where his feet got stuck under the ball. You know, just things were happening.
Yeah, I think up until Fabinho going off, there was a big positive in Tsimikas, right? I was taking notes all the way through. In the eighth minute, he has that sort of weird cross shot, but there's nobody in the box, so he's just having a pop, isn't he? On 10 minutes, Jota plays it through to Diaz. And again, it's a slightly sort of poor touch stumble. And on another day, you know, Diaz is going to round the keeper. Mane has a near post miss. Jota has a shot blocked. And then we get to the one you mentioned, the back post miss. So by the time Mane's missed that, we've had four or five chances from the goal. So I felt like something would come and we would get there. But it did feel like it was going to be a war of attrition to get a goal. It felt like it was going to be a penalty off the back of someone's head, something stupid to go in. And so I was trying not to get frustrated. There was a Diaz offside where Mane taps it in. Obviously, Keita's miss another. There weren't many corners, were there? And then at the end of the half, Jones tried to pull his Coutinho, didn't he, and tried a couple of long shots, and we were getting chances and we were getting space, and you know, there were good quality chances, there were near misses, there were Tsimikas was a real positive in the first half, minus the goal, because he was trying to get the ball in the box, he was trying to make the runs, he stands up to players, he doesn't give a crap, does he, who you are. So it was annoying, but I felt like a goal would come, but I felt like it was going to come from Tsimikas. It's just that he was really good in the first half. And then, weirdly, when Fab goes off and Hendo comes on, the midfield slowed down and we kept the ball. But, you know, the UP boys said, didn't they, yesterday, that the stats don't say that Hendo brings control. But when Fab's having an off day like that, I think it was more Fab going off than Hendo coming on that made the difference, but we definitely looked a lot better when we had fielders on.
I'm gonna bring two things up when it comes to Henderson right now, because I actually think he was actually quite good when he came on, and I think he did the job that we needed him to. But first off, he's been better at the six than he has at the eight all season, and we've controlled games more with him at the six than we have at the eight, with the exception of most likely kind of, I guess, Brighton, where Keita comes off and it forces our midfield to just kind of get ragged, because it became Ox, Jones, and Henderson, and there's no player who can do what someone like a Keita or a Thiago does to control a game. But Henderson can actually still play that sixth role decently if you put the right eights around him. Where if you give him eights that can either cover ground or control tempo, and his job just becomes to try to win the ball back a little bit here and there, like ball recovery and keeping the ball moving. Typically, that's when he does well at that role. And against teams that sit back, that's where it works. So there's always the possibility that he could actually, you know, if we are without Fab on Saturday, a Henderson, Keita, Thiago midfield, is your most likely midfield. Also makes sense, because it does have three guys who have differentiated roles enough that you'd be able to have some balance.
Yeah, I think against teams that sit back, teams that give space to Henderson, regardless of how deep he is, I think they're the games where he plays well as the six. But I think the big difference is the shortcomings of Henderson's game is when he gives the ball to Thiago, Thiago just dictates the play. So as long as Henderson's cleaning up, moving the ball around, doing his usual Captain America shouting at everybody thing, I think he's fine. I think it's when he thinks he's Gerrard and tries to take the game by the scruff of the neck that I've had enough of him now. So yeah, I think he was fine today. It wasn't meant as a dig at Henderson per se. It was more that suddenly having another player actually playing as opposed to Fab, who just looked really off the pace, made quite a big difference. And as we said at the start of the pod, I thought Jones was playing reasonably well. He was having a 6-7 out of 10. He was trying to keep the ball. He was trying to be positive. And had Naby not fallen over himself, he would have got man of the match today. I think that's the only reason he didn't get it, is that miss, I think. So I think, you know, there are some positives that we kept going. We didn't let it get to us. We were making chances. And we just got to keep grinding out wins. Just got to grind out five more wins.
Five more, guys. Five more. I mean, yeah, you spoke about, you know, Tsimikas in that first half, you know, trying to get the crosses in, and we certainly saw it. But, you know, let's move on swiftly to the second half. And Trent had a couple of free kicks. I mean, Justin, what did you make of his... when was the last time he actually scored from a free kick? I can't
West Ham.
Was it?
West Ham away.
Oh, yeah, he was.
I mean, his first free kick of the second half narrowly missed. The second half, Trent actually looked like he was starting to find, you know, find his targets and get his range. That's good. That's something that we really need. Like, a lot of our inability to... We haven't finished well lately, but a lot of our inability save something like, you know, Keita's absolutely wide-open chances. We haven't gotten a lot of open, clear-cut chances. Like, we've regressed statistically in the amount that we create each week. Right, it doesn't take a genius to know that the fewer chances you create, the fewer chances you score. Right, it's obvious, but a lot of how we actually create chances just relies on Trent being an elite playmaker. He's been that for 8 nights of the season, and we could use him. We could use him rediscovering that for, you know, at the very least, a Champions League final and an FA Cup final, but also. It would be nice if he can do it in two more league games where we could potentially win those. So it's, you know, those are what we need. I think it's actually, you know, incumbent on him to do that, because he's our main creative, and we need our main creative fire to get the business end.
We absolutely do. He is absolutely sensational. And we've just been corrected in the Discord chat box by Adam and Nubo saying it's four more wins. And then Adam goes, five if you're thinking about United on June the 12th in South Asia somewhere, Southeast Asia somewhere. Yeah, of course, four big games. Sorry, guys.
If we have to drop one of them, I will gladly sacrifice ourselves for, I guess, would it be Eric Ten Hag's first Liverpool Manchester United game? If we have to lose one of those, you know, I'll take I'll gladly sacrifice that one to win the other four.
Hear, hear. And Steve, I'm going to come to you, and I want to get your thoughts on, you know, first of all, I'm assuming, Steve, did you watch that game on Sky Sports?
Yes, but I've kind of started to zone out the horrific commentary.
I was just going to touch on that, because that, I think, did not help the matters in the first half. And also Jamie Redknapp's halftime analysis. There was just a lot of, Liverpool weren't, you know, it wasn't great. But I just remember Jamie Carragher saying something along the lines of when Alisson had that brain fart moment in the first half. Oh, he has one of them every game. No, he doesn't.
Yeah, and he also makes it sound like Trent scores 20 free kicks a season. When he lies up, it's like, oh, this is definitely a Trent shot. And it's like, is it? Because we've scored some nice free kicks this year where we've put it in the back post for our centre-backs. So, I don't know. I think I kind of feel like Carragher and Neville have turned into commentary clickbait, right? They say things for reaction, not because they're actually any good anymore. And I kind of feel like Mane got man of the match because he's Carragher's favourite player, not because he was actually the best player on the pitch. I thought Keita and Tsimikas were both, overall of the game, were better. I think when we switched in the second half, we put Diaz back on the left. We looked so much more dangerous. He's just a lot more comfortable and confident there. Mm. When we were playing on the right, it looked more like he was trying to play in behind two strikers, and it wasn't quite working. And I know he's scoring goals, but I'm not down with the Mane experiment as a centre forward. I don't think it suits him. He scored his goal when he was playing on the right of the three, and he scored. And with all the positioning swapping, I think Diaz looked good, but then suddenly you kept looking up and Diaz and Jota and Mane were both getting each other's way quite a lot in the second half. They were both a bit too close to each other when you'd want one of them running on the shoulder and one of them dropping in. So I just think either play Jota or get a centre forward, but stop playing them both and swapping them in and out of the match. They're getting each other's way. But there was a really lovely cross from Diaz where Jota tries to break down to Jones, and Jones sort of trips over his feet, doesn't he? So Diaz gets the free. Does he get fouled for the free kick? I know he's driving at the defence when we win the first free kick. So I think moving him across the left made a big difference. But the commentary, I can't. Do you know what? I almost wrote it down, and I didn't write it down because it was so annoying. They said something completely obscure and ridiculous, and I was like, "God, Sky's got shit these days, hasn't it?" And then I just zoned out the rest of the game.
Yeah, maybe we need to start watching football on mute. And Justin, I'm going to come to you because, you know, you spoke about Jones and I thought he played really well. But I think, you know, the game, I don't know, there was, even though we looked better, I felt like there was still something a little disjointed about us, you know, in terms of attack. There was something, the final ball just wasn't quite right. So, you know, Jones comes off, Thiago comes on, and, you know, instantly there is... I don't know. He makes an impact straight away, you know. Within 4 minutes, we get the goal. And, you know, I think it is, you know, sort of Thiago's kind of pressing. And I think you tweeted it and it went so unnoticed. I mean, Diaz got the assist because obviously he puts the ball across to Sadio Mane.
The ball that Jota played into the corner. Yes, Diaz is incredibly good.
Yes.
For a guy who gets killed for his build-up play, and by the way, some of that's rightfully so, because his build-up play today was fairly bad. The ball sometimes doesn't stick. But Diogo Jota does have a habit of, you know, finding a good time to make an impact in a game and usually having it in some way linked to a goal. Now, usually it's on the finishing end. But in this case, it's a Thiago press, Jota with a ball recovery, Jota playing a ball that finds Diaz in space that he can exploit, and it's a really good cross to Mai, who gets a really brave header in. It's the type of goal... It's the type of goal that you see that you know what to be. It's a little harsh on Jones because he might have been able to, you know, put that pressure on in that space to win the ball back. But Thiago also is an elite presser, so maybe Jones couldn't have. But it is the type of thing where, you know, it's a really good goal. And at that exact point when that ball went in, I knew that the game was basically over. I did not see Villa scoring. They did. Because Villa didn't really, that's the thing, outside their goal, which could have been offside, was offside, because Ollie Watkins is massively offside in the build-up, they didn't really create anything against us. Like, they didn't really break us down very often. The closest I think we've had was, you know, Danny Ings running through a few times, but he's offside nearly every single time. You have Felipe Coutinho breaking through on Virgil, but then Virgil recovering and showing why... We're glad that we have Virgil van Dijk and not Felipe Coutinho in Liverpool still.
And Coutinho basically saw it was Virgil and fell over.
Yeah. And
that's how many people do.
Yeah. Virgil van Dijk is an extremely intimidating footballer, but we stifled their ability to create. They made it hard on us, but hard but manageable, because we still had a bunch of opportunities to score. They had one good opportunity that was offside and they scored it. I'm not as impressed by Villa today as I was, as a lot of other people, I guess, in the media will be, because it's Steven and the British media probably love him. I mean, I love him too. But I don't think that they were very good. I don't know what their tactical game plan was outside waste a ton of time and just try to be frustrated. That's every team we play against in the Premier League.
they got in behind a few times, but pretty much all of them were offside. However, we're elite at that particular way of defending, and if that's how they play against City, and City have got three of their probably first choice defenders out, that's why I said that looking at the positives of how Villa did, I think they could cause problems for City on the last game of the season. But I'm kind of with you on Jota. I think I'd much prefer to be seeing him playing as the nine at the moment. He had two or three. As I said, there was one in the first half where he plays it through to Diaz, and Diaz can't quite control it. He's coming in from the right onto his left foot. He obviously plays it through to Diaz for the free kick. He does the little knockdown to Curtis, where Curtis can't get on the end of it. I think Jota did a lot of positive things today, and he wasn't superb or brilliant, but he was trying to do the right thing. And I just think he's more suited as a nine. I think he feels more, he looks more natural at where he's moving. Whereas Sadio, I think, still he's either still learning it or it's not, doesn't quite suit him. But then they start to get in each other's way because they're both trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, if we're going to actually, you know, kind of run this rotation of how we use our forwards, I do think it needs to be a bit more horses for courses than just a straight rotation where you just flip where every one of them goes. Because it did feel like at times in the first half, the forward line just didn't know what they should be doing and how to play together.
Yeah.
Because that forward line hasn't seen a lot of minutes together in that particular way, right?
Yeah.
It's like most of the time.
Mane was world class, isn't far off world class on the left. Today he scored his goal when he was playing on the right, and before we signed Mane, he was a brilliant goal scoring, you know, right forward. So I think with Mane, just play him in one of the two wide positions.
Yeah, I would play Mane I'd play Mane on the left before I'd play Diaz there, because as much as I've liked what I see from Diaz, the threat with him is the ability to either roll you and cut really close to the post where he's still able to see most of the goal with his right foot. Like, playing on the left, if you're regardless of how you're running, if you're running at the byline or you're running at, or you're cutting inside, your right foot still gives you the best angle to shoot at a goal, right? Mane is more two-footed than Diaz. He gives you a goal threat from his left foot as well. We've seen him absolutely blast the ball with his left foot. Him and Jota are our two left foot, are there two guys that we have that strike a ball with both feet really well on the run. Now, Jota doesn't play very well on the right at all, because you really just play up center because of the limitations and possibly how he attacks the ball and carries the ball. But Mane is the one you shift right, and you keep Mane in space.
Yeah, Mane's our best left forward, and he's our second best right-sided forward. It's that simple. And I think when you want to play the three, I'd even, if they really want to play the three, play Mo through the middle.
Yeah.
And it's a different game, because when Mo plays through the middle, he plays on the shoulder of the last defender. He doesn't play dropping deep. But we have done that so infrequently the last 2 years, it'd scare people. Or just rotate the three wide forwards and just rotate Bobby and Jota through the middle, like the first half of the season. How many important goals did Jota score? How many goals? Like when we signed him, like the first thing I tweeted Dave Hendrick was like, "Oh, we're going to score loads of back post headers." And Sam Maguire put up an article of how Jota scores loads of back post headers. And this season, he's done it again. Right, the ball comes in from the right, gets the. Back post, he's been brilliant, and stop trying to shoehorn Mo, Mane and Diaz at the same time. I think he'll be really, really important in the finals, whether he plays 10 minutes, 80 minutes, just bringing in that. It's not quite target man, is it? But you can play the ball into him, and he can take the ball with his back to defenders. He can take the ball running at defenders.
Yeah, he kind of pulls the strings for people. Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? I have some questions on this, because I'm going to go through them real quick. And it Steve, it's pretty much what you just said there about control. And I've got a question here from Hardeep Bambra, and he wants to know, do you think Thiago gave us better control versus Curtis Jones being better in a more basketball kind of game?
I think Thiago would be better in either type of game. This isn't like a knock on Curtis Jones, who's a player who I absolutely love, but Thiago Alcantara is one of the greatest midfielders who's ever played. So yeah, I think he just gives you more control.
And I also think saying CJ's better at a basketball game is a misgiving of how he plays. I thought Jones today was trying. He's not Thiago, but I think that's who he wants to model himself on. If you watched how he was today, he was picking the ball up. He was playing sideways and simple passes and trying to keep the ball moving positively. He wasn't box to box, charging around the way he was in his first couple of seasons getting into the team. I think he started to mature and he is turning into more of an eight and less of that, you know, more attacking minded player who's been in there. I think Thiago gives us the control for exactly what Justin says, because Thiago is one of the best centre midfielders in the world.
He's an excellent mentor then, isn't he, for Curtis Jones? Because if he's showing more maturity in his game, then it's only good that he beats his little understudy, right?
Yeah.
I just want to throw one thing out there. If we're talking about Curtis today, he only misplayed four passes in the entire time he was on the pitch.
Well,
so I feel like, you know, with the basketball game, you are talking about a lot of turnover and possession. And I think that Curtis didn't really do that. You know, it's not like he was trying to shoot from everywhere or take every single player on, right? I think he did play within the structure of what we wanted our midfield to do. It's just that I think that Villa also kind of pressed us a bit, made it feel like more of a basketball game than it was. And then they died because they can't keep that style up for 90 minutes.
Yeah, and when Curtis shot, it was the right decision, and they were both chances where we've seen him score before.
Yes.
But when it wasn't the right decision, he was keeping the ball moving. And if he can be half the player Thiago is, he will be a very, very good Liverpool player for a very long time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I thought it was a mature performance from him today, but bringing on Thiago was the right move for what we needed. With, you know, with the whole Hendo being in for Fab thing, we needed a bit more of a dictator with the experience of when to slow the ball down, when to move it. He plays some really lovely passes, Thiago.
He does. He really, really does. And you know what? I've got another comment from Adam Petitioni. He loves to keep it lively in Discord, and I love that. I think it's kind of alluding to what you said, Justin, about, you know, they didn't really have many chances, Aston Villa. And he goes, if it wasn't for Alisson and Virgil, the Ings and Phil chances might have gone a lot differently. Alisson is approaching player of the year for us with his performances. And of course, you know, we scored round about, I'd say, on the 64th minute, but round about 68 minutes, I think Ings was through on goal, and Alisson had to make himself huge one-on-one with Danny Ings. And we know Danny Ings can be threatening in those positions. And, you know, those crucial saves, I mean, they are huge, right? I mean, even though they didn't have anything, we were just kind of, I don't know, making our own kind of mistakes. But, you know, thank God for a keeper like Alisson Becker.
He's like the Hulk, isn't he? Like, he comes from nowhere. He's quietly just stood watching the match. He gets in a one-on-one and this massive green monster appears and comes out with the ball. With the Ings chance, when you watch the replay, Ings looks absolutely petrified of what just happened to him.
Yeah.
He just doesn't see him coming. He was phenomenal and he was a difference maker, but that's what one of the world's most expensive goalkeepers has to be, right? He has to be that player all the time for us. And it's what allows us to play the high line, because he is probably the best keeper in the world at one-on-ones. Same as Virgil, is probably the best centre-back in the world at one-on-ones. But I thought Matip was particularly good today. He got a lot of clearances in. He didn't, again, the goal was a bit of a shambles, but apart from that, he didn't get fazed by anybody, you know, tackles in the box. Simicass, you know, made a sliding tackle on, was it Ollie Watkins? Mm-hmm. After a bit of a mix-up, I thought the whole defence played well. And even though everyone remembers Alisson and Virgil for the big moments. I think we need to remember that Matip and Costas had a few of their own. I think they all performed pretty well. And Trent was played admirably. He just looked tired.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think that's pretty much spot on. And Justin, what are your thoughts on, you know, the Alisson save? Because he just like literally just turned up out of nowhere. And I think Steve just hit the nail on the head where, you know, Danny Ings looked a little bit petrified. You know, he looks down, looks up, and there's, you know, big Ali just staring at him. Well, not staring at him, but, you know, making himself dead big and, you know, imposing himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think Steve nailed basically everything that I want to say about Alisson Becker and Virgil van Dijk, so I'll just add something else, which is that they're both also very handsome.
I like that. Analysis. Yep.
Yeah.
I think not many people will disagree with you on that one as well. You know, both of them to get a lot of loving from our male supporters with regards to how they look and the females as well. And Justin, I'll stick to you because, you know, Diaz came off. I thought he had a really good game. Moore comes on and he instantly looked bright. You know, like, I think he's definitely a player that was due a little bit of a rest.
He was. Moe's going to, like, we know how this goes. Guys like him who are on scoring droughts, like, they don't tend to, there tends to be a point where they get comically long and then they just break. Like, I remember in the Champions League season, Mo had a bunch of bad finishing games in a row, and then finally scores that breakaway against Southampton, and the floodgates came open. Let's just hope that starts on Saturday, because obviously he's going to start the game, and he's always had a decent goal scoring record against Chelsea. So it would be really nice to see him start that on Saturday and just, you know, tear the ass out of a few pieces. Be out of four teams for the rest of the season.
Absolutely, and I'll be intrigued to see what yoga pose he does against Chelsea as well. Steve, I'm going to come to you. I mean, what do you make of Mo Salah? I thought he looked really, really bright when he came on. Sort of sparked a new kind of energy for me in the attack, you know, and Diaz played really well as well. So, you know, it's just great to have that kind of quality to come off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, he almost scored with his first touch.
Yes.
But we all know what Mo's like. Had he scored with his first touch, you know he's going home with a match ball today and he's battered them single-handedly. And I genuinely think if he scores against Chelsea or Madrid in the first 15 minutes of both the finals, we're going to very comfortably win. I also think if he scores early against Chelsea, he's probably scoring 7 on Tuesday next week. Is it Tuesday we play Southampton? He's that one open play, outrageous goal from just tearing somebody apart. Like the next time he cuts his slide onto his left and curls one in from 18, 19 yards, it's just going to open the floodgates, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. He's just phenomenal. And it's so great to have that kind of player on your team. And yeah, he instantly made an impact as soon as he came on. So, you know, we'd love to see that. Guys, we have pretty much come to the end of the show. I mean, Justin, is there any takeaways you've got from the game? Anything you want to share?
No, at this point, I feel like analysis. And at this point, analysis to me is kind of over. Don't even care about doing it. Just want to, you know, get on with it and see what happens over these next four games.
And I think that's fair. And what about you, Steve? Anything from the game? Any takeaways?
Cater's massive balls. Because there must be a huge to have been clipped like that and be rolling around because, you know, they were nowhere near them. And B, he's about a foot shorter than Mings and he was having none of it. I love that. I love seeing players just it's thoroughly enjoyable when you're watching Mings shouting fuck off as he walked away from Keita but with his back to him because he's realised if he says it to his face again, it's not going to end well. And then again, rolling around holding his groin because his testicles are so big, he's banged them into his knees. Because it's the only explanation for that last 95th minute little episode, isn't it?
And nothing to say to that. yeah, absolutely. Guys, we need to get your man of the match shout. So, Steve, I will come to you first. Who's your man of the match and why?
Costas, because he just kept on going and going and going and going, and he nearly got an assist for Matip, and he was just a bright light after Robbo's had a tired few weeks. And it wasn't his fault he didn't get an assist. It's because Matip went back into 50p head mode in the 75th minute. And we're going to need him. Robbo wasn't even on the bench, was he? So I think we're going to need him for the next few games. Kate was a close second, but I'm going to go for Costas.
I like that. A bit different. And yep, definitely it's so great to have a quality left back who can kind of step into a role, because I think we can all agree Robbo has been looking a little tired and jaded, which is to be expected. And what about you, Justin? Who are you going to go with for your man of the match?
Yeah, the ridiculous miss does nothing for me with it. It's still Naby Keita. He completely and totally outplayed the entire Villa midfield. And, the shithousery at the end is quite nice to see from one of our players, you know. Villa sought to waste a lot of time with us in two matches against us. And, it's good to see us returning the favor once we have a lead.
I love it. We have got two really, really great shouts there. And, Naby Keita gets a lot of stick and a lot of criticism. And I thought he had a really wonderful game. But then you got Tsimikas, who didn't feature much last season at all, actually, because of all the injuries. And I think Jurgen Klopp was just not trying to play that risky game. And, people thought, has he got a future at this club? And he stepped in when Robbo's been out, when he was out injured, and he just pushed Robbo to another level, and he just showed that he's an excellent deputy. I mean, it's a hard shout for me. I'm going to have to go with Naby Keita on this one. Purely because I thought, again, he gets a lot of criticism. I like him in that midfield. I thought he played really well. And that's where the games are won, is the control in the midfield. So, yeah, I'm going to give it to Naby Keita. Guys, let us know your man of the match shouts. Tweet us, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really, really hope you enjoyed it. Before I go, I'm going to go to my guests and see if I can get some plugs from them. So, Justin, I'm going to come to you. Is there anything you'd like to plug? Where can people find you on social media?
You can find me at Rolls on Shabbos. I occasionally also tweet from the LFCNY account. So if you like a joke I've told, then good. Otherwise, yeah, that's where you can find me.
Give him a follow. And what about you, Steve? Where can people find you on social media? And is there anything you'd like to plug? Can't hear Steve.
I forgot to push the talk. FA Cup final. Me, Guy, Lisa, a few of us have been doing the domestic cups this year. We've been on a pretty good run getting all the way to two finals. So, and it's my first podcast for Trev, actually. So come and listen to the final show. That'll be a lot of fun.
That sounds like a quality lineup. So do check that out. Do give it a listen. And hopefully, the A-star team of AI are talking about Liverpool winning the FA Cup against Chelsea. So yeah, definitely check that out. And best of luck to Liverpool, and best of luck to these awesome, awesome people, and Lisa as well on that podcast. Lisa is awesome. Going to put that out there. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all the people that joined us live on Discord. I know it's late. I know we're all on different hours. A massive shout out to Chris for calling in. A massive thank you to these two, Justin and Steve. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. I hope you enjoyed that win. And just a small matter of a cup game over the weekend. Till next time, take care and up the Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.